Welcome to Lives, a show exploring our experiences in the world and how we might live well. I'm Stuart Chittenden, and my guest today is poet Carolina Hochendani. In today's show, Hochendani talks about themes of identity, belonging, and loss in her debut poetry collection, The Book Eaters, as she explores her own lived experiences as a new mother, a daughter whose father is in cognitive decline, and a woman of mixed global heritage. As well as discussing her writing, Hochendani will read some of her poems.
The line that breaks me in two is neater than I thought natural things could be. Once the baby's born, the thin strip slowly fades. But I'll look at my child, her skin whiter than mine, and feel divided.
Carolina Hochendani is the author of The Book Eaters, 2023 Perugia Press Prize winner, which was one of the 10 debut poetry books featured in Poets and Writers magazine's 2024 Debut Poets issue. Hochendani's poetry has appeared in The Atlantic, Agni, Missouri Review, Prairie Schooner, and various other journals. She is a Goodrich Assistant Professor of English at the University of Nebraska-Omaha in Nebraska, where she lives with her husband and daughter. Carolina Hochendani, welcome to Lives.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to talk about your book. I want to talk about the themes in it. But I think in some ways, to understand you is to understand a little bit of your book. And to understand a little bit of you is to understand a little bit of the book. And so the book itself has themes around belonging and loss and erasure and identity. And it explores motherhood and geographies and all these kinds of things that we'll get to. But I think I want to approach the book by approaching you first. You dedicate the book to your mother and your late father. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we should start with them. Would you share a little bit about who they are?
Sure. My mother is Brazilian. She comes from a mostly Italian and Portuguese family, was born in Brazil. And my father was Indian, and he was a nuclear chemist. He met my mother in Rio on a day when neither of them was meant to be there. They met on a bus, and it was quite a fortuitous meeting. 2 days after they met, he proposed to her. And, I think that when people hear that story, they think, oh, well, he must have been such a romantic, or, and the thing is, I think that people maybe assume that just because that's what we think of, like love at first sight, but actually it's just that he came from a culture where arranged marriage was, it was the norm. And so you make up your mind quickly when you like somebody and you commit, and then, the relationship happens after that commitment is made. And so that's really where he was coming from. And my mom, when he proposed to her, honestly, she thought she was a little bit afraid that he was, a little out of his mind. she was like, I don't even know you. And at that point, he said, well, we can get to know each other. And she was very intrigued. And that led to their life together. So we moved to the United States when I was four. So I was born in Brazil. And then we've moved around the United States from then on. We sort of started to settle after we became citizens when I was 10. So the place where we sort of lived the longest was Oak Ridge, Tennessee, when I was growing up, but many other places before that.
You, in your poem, Self-Portrait of a Woman Halved, write, I am East and I am West. And you've described a little bit of that as you're talking about your parents, how did their sort of rich heritage, their diverse heritages, show up for you in your childhood as you were sort of discovering life, discovering the world, discovering yourself?
Well, we spoke Portuguese at home. My mom insisted that we speak Portuguese, even after we moved to the United States. My father thought it was very important for us to also learn English, and so he would speak to us in English. So there was just this confluence of languages in our house, you know, Portuguese, English, and then my father would speak to his own relatives on the phone in Hindi or Sindhi. So there was that. We ate Brazilian food at home and, you know, went to many Indian weddings. It was just a kind of like my father's family had more of an influence apart from, you know, apart from just like the language, I think just their culture, their value of education. I think, you know, since all of his family lived in the United States, I think we really felt that influence, my brother and I did.
What else sort of stands out from your childhood? You mentioned being born in Brazil, but coming to America, but also traveling around quite a lot and having all sorts of cultural reference points. You know, what else stands out to you from your childhood?
I do write about moving, and I think just the way in which moving a lot affects how you see yourself and how you see place. You know, I think that I found myself thinking a lot as I was writing the book about how if you have a hometown, you can kind of regard the place as a container for memories. And in a sense, you know, revisiting certain places means that you will kind of encounter past selves that of your own that, you know, lived there. And if you don't have those places around you, then you have to hold them within yourself. And so that's one thing that I write about.
Is your brother younger, older than you?
He's younger.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A couple of years younger.
We know now, because you've published this wonderful book of poems, that writing is not only a vocation, but it's a profession for you. But when did it first appear? When did writing and literature and poetry first sort of show up in your world?
It was more like early college, a little bit late high school, but I started to think of writing as something that was going to be a kind of integral part of my life when I was in college. I think coming from an immigrant family, I was pushed toward more, you know, pragmatic fields. So declaring that I was going to be an English major was not necessarily easy for my family. And I think many people who don't come from immigrant families also have that experience, just because the world is what it is and values, you know, other kinds of, you know, other kinds of work more sometimes, unfortunately.
I don't know about sometimes, quite often.
But so I started to write around that time. And I think that writing is my way of processing, making sense of change, making sense of loss. You know, that time of young adulthood and moving away from my family and beginning a life on my own was the beginning of that.
You know, it's one thing considering studying a degree in some form of writing, literature, poetry, but you pursued it through to a terminal degree. And so you spent a long time committing to it. And at each stage, you could have decided to maybe choose a different path. You know, what motivated you to stick with it to the point where this was the career? And I don't know what else you can do with a poetry PhD.
I think it's just very essential to me, the act of writing. I don't find the experience of living on its own to be satisfying enough. Honestly, I feel like in order for me to make meaning of experiences, I have to write. And if I'm going to write, you know, I kind of needed to find a life, you know, find a way to have it continue to be at the center of my life. And definitely when you're a student in a writing program, it is the center of your life then. And then when you leave such programs, you have to then figure out, okay, how am I going to sustain this? How can I find work that allows me to continue to live in this way?
Many of the poets that I've asked the question, when did you know you were a poet? And when did you actually declare yourself to be a poet? I get so many varied answers, but quite often it's a reluctant late blooming into that self-identity or that title. When did you first say to yourself, I am a poet, and declare that to the world?
I'm not sure I made such declarations until this book came out, honestly, even though I think it was a very gradual process. I started to write this book in 2016, and so, you know, I was spending a great deal of time working on it. But I do think that it was only when the book was picked up for publication that I felt like it was legitimate to claim the title.
You and I chatting, we have the books in front of us. I'll try to describe what I'm seeing. And as I look at the cover, I'm seeing references to mother and baby. I'm seeing breastfeeding. I'm seeing fractures and bonding. I'm seeing elements of darkness, but also bright color. I'm seeing the bodies are made up of words and language. And so I feel as if, having read the book, that the cover is its own visual interpretation of the journey for the reader. And it was, I should say, it was designed by Elizabeth Munger. What am I perhaps capturing correctly with that? But also, what am I missing inside the book that the cover's capturing?
So yes, I think that if you look at the cover, I think you're looking primarily at this like relationship between mother and child, and the book, you know, this is particularly, there are three sections in the book, and the second section explores new motherhood. There's also quite a lot devoted to my father losing his memory. I started writing this book at a time when my daughter was 1.5 or so. And so she was, you know, entering into what we call an identity. And at the same time, it seemed my father was falling out of his identity, losing language, losing memory. And so I, you know, there's that part of the book is pretty significant. That's the first part that has to do with him and his loss. And then I think that the third section is sort of a synthesis of the other parts. Like, if, you know, it's as though, if we're supposed to think of it as an argument, like, you know, okay, so there's the father losing his memory. A woman transforms completely as she becomes a mother, also feels like there are aspects of her identity that are lost. Then who are we, and what is an identity? And I think that maybe the third section of the book is trying to grapple with that question philosophically.
I can't imagine how painful and disorienting it is to feel the connection with someone that you love so much and have such a history with start to fade away, especially if your craft and vocation is language. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, so far as you're able, if you can describe, you know, what was happening and how were you trying to explore that in words, in poetry?
An aphasic person, you know, ends up losing language and sort of degenerating to the point that language becomes really garbled. My father wasn't diagnosed with aphasia. He was he had dementia. And so I do use the term just to talk about that loss of language, because that is those moments of language loss, those were sort of the first traces of there being something a little different about him. As he started to lose language and memory, I started to think about my own poems as attempts to memorialize the lost memories and also the lost words. So this like portrait of aphasia, there are various poems within the book that are portrait, you know, portrait of aphasia on a plum tree and so on. Then, you know, I kind of saw the poem as almost like a, yeah, like a memorial to that word that my father was grasping for, or, you know, whatever it was that was being lost. I started to regard language as a kind of substitute or attempted substitute.
Was your father aware that he himself was losing this sense of connection with himself and with people around him like you?
Yes, he certainly was. I think he wasn't aware to it to the extent that everyone else was, but he would comment on not being able to remember things and words not coming to him. So, yes.
And how did you feel about perhaps this sense that you yourself were in some ways being erased? Because if your father's not remembering the stories and the narratives correctly about your life, your lives together, I don't know how you approach that sense that elements of you are being lost in that fog at the same time.
It was really disorienting. And I think, you know, as I said before, I was a new mother. So I was already feeling like within my own life, a loss of freedom, a loss of the person that I was, you know, before I was the mother. So there's a kind of mourning that was happening in just within that trajectory. But then to have that be sort of doubled over by my father forgetting certain aspects or certain years of my life, it was really disorienting. And I found myself just thinking, okay, so his memory is gone of that time, but I have my memory of that time. So that time still exists, like in me. But then I just found myself going down these rabbit holes of thought of like, how present is that time for me anyway, that time that he has forgotten? It's not as though I spend all my time thinking about that time, you know? So what does it even mean to lose memory? Like the past has gone and is constantly receding. And so it would be disorienting. It would feel like a loss, but then I would also be thinking about like what was the nature of the loss. And I think that the loss was a loss of connection, you know, and that like you come to realize that what connects you to other people, or some people at least, is a shared memory. And when those memories stop being shared, then it does feel like a loss of connection.
You're quite explicit that a large driver behind the book is this shift in the physical experience and the emotional experience of people around you. But you also talk about in one of the poems that you don't tend to write a lot about your mother. And your mother does appear in poems in the book, but relatively few comparatively. I think in one poem, Cursive, I think it's called, you say, I don't write a lot about my mother. Why is that?
Well, I found myself realizing that in the book and that, you know, that I didn't write very much about her. And I started writing about her when she was diagnosed with cancer. And it was really at that point that I realized, okay, I write about what I'm losing. This is so my mother has always been very present, you know, and very reliable and solid. And I mean, same with my husband. You know, I feel I completely rely on him. And so there's just not that relationship of like him fading away. And it was really when my mother became ill that I started to write about her and started to think about the fact that this seems to be what motivates my writing.
So motherhood, of course, is another key element of your recent experience and what is expressed and explored in the book. But that too has its counterpoint. And as you just shared, that you like to explore loss and work with it in your poetry. And so to be a mother, as you describe it, is also to lose possibly something else, or to see another part of you, maybe not lost, but certainly placed somewhere else for the time being. And I'm wondering, as you look back on what you wrote about that, if you can perhaps share what are those elements of you that you felt had been pushed to one side or cleaved away, and how you've gone about getting back that sense of I, that sense of calling yourself a poet again.
Well, there is one poem in the book. It's called Small Green Bowl. And it's even about how I refer to myself in the third person. You know, especially when my daughter was really young, I would refer to myself as mama to her, privileging her perspective of me. When she started to speak and started to ask for the things she wanted, she would say things like, "Do you want more? Do you want blueberries?" That was her way of asking for blueberries, because that's what I ask her. And so she just thought of you as a kind of name for herself, and mama was who I was. And so I just think that, you know, that transition into becoming a parent, even language itself registers like how completely sidelined and marginalized you become to yourself. Like, you know, myself, like just referring to myself in third person, it's not how I see myself. And I think as, you know, as my daughter matured, then that changes, you know. Partly it's that I need to teach her how to say I, you know. And so I need to actually use an I to refer to myself so that she learns what that means.
You also explore this feeling, this physical erasure, when you write about this phantom limb phenomena, and you write about losing the sense that your leg was part of you. It was your leg, and also writing about an arm that's now this phantom limb. It's not there. Did you actually have these experiences, and did they represent, were they sort of metaphors for, again, this sense of what have I lost? What's disappeared?
Yeah, I did have the experience of not being able to feel my legs after having an epidural during labor. It is both real and a metaphor of just a sense of displacement, I think, and a sense of, you know, not being in one's own body. And yeah, there's the poem Phantom. I it was early on in after my daughter was born. I think that I had been nursing, and, you know, for so many hours, and I was just in these like half asleep states nursing, and I had to get up in the middle of the night to go use the bathroom, and I handed my arm to my husband and was like, "Can you hold her for a little while?" And he was like, "You're not giving me the baby." You know, and I just think that, yeah, I think that captures this strangeness of just that time. How you relate to your body, how you relate to sleeping and wakefulness. It's all a bit of a blur.
Is now a good time to ask if you would read something that you feel fits your mood and the moment?
Okay, I'll read Self-Portrait as a Woman Halved. What seems a long time ago, a line of pigment drew itself down the middle of my torso, linea nigra, splitting the globe of my belly into hemispheres. I am East and I am West, child of parents from both sides of the world. Brazil is my mother's motherland, land of the Pau Brasil, the tree that gave the country its name, its red sap extracted by those who were enslaved. They powdered the sap to make a dye, connoting power in European fabrics. Power powder. My father is Indian, land of cinnamon and clove, land of the spices the Portuguese sailed east for, land of the tea the English mass-produced, so that Indians now drink it with milk, as my father does, as I've learned to do. The line that breaks me in two is neater than I thought natural things could be. Once the baby's born, the thin strip slowly fades. But I'll look at my child, her skin whiter than mine, and feel divided. Afraid the world will grant her an ease that keeps her from knowing me. Glad, too, for that same reason.
I don't think that kind of ethnic difference is necessarily a large part, but certainly you explore in the book some instances where people just come across as racist. In one poem, A Cord to Bind Us, you're recounting how, I don't know who it was, but someone is asking, is this white baby yours? So I'm curious the degree to which you're trying to examine issues of kind of a cultural heritage in the face of maybe a real world out there that gives you different sort of a different sense of who you think you are compared to how perhaps the stereotypes they use to apply to you.
I was very surprised by the fact that this became a concern for me, the fact that my daughter's skin was lighter than mine, the fact that she could pass as white. I was very surprised that I had that I was sort of worried about it, worried that people would think she wasn't mine. I hadn't expected that feeling. I hadn't expected worrying that people would think of me maybe as her nanny. But it did come up for me, that worry. Also, I don't think I fully realized the extent to which my own difference from, you know, the majority when I was growing up made me a person that didn't try to conform. You know, I really see that difference from the majority as having created a kind of strength and a kind of conviction to just be my own person and to not even try. You know, I didn't try to be cool, you know, to be other people's ideas of cool when I was growing up. But it's not like I really thought about that so much, but like, oh, why, you know, why was it that I wasn't so interested in conformity? You know, it was only when my daughter was white that I suddenly thought, oh no, she's just going to try to be like everyone else. And so then, which I should just say, you know, that's not what I think necessarily happens when one is white, but it is because I did not have that option that there's a different kind of strength that must emerge. And so when I suddenly thought, oh, okay, maybe, you know, maybe she will be other people's idea of beautiful, and how destructive that could be, that then you might just try to chase that, you know? And so I was sort of, in one sense, like terrified of that. And in her trying to be like everyone else. And then on the other hand, kind of like, oh, well, it might be nice, you know, if people treat you like you belong.
Thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate that use of the word belong. I also appreciate you talking about this degree of resilience and fortitude and confidence in just who you are and showing up in the world like that. And you mentioned earlier how your family had moved around a lot and that you wrote about that. And the poem that springs to my mind is the one called The Boxes. Mm-hmm. And in that poem, I can't remember the exact line now, but you make some reference to being in at one school and some girls were just mean. They said like mean things about you and you heard that. But, you know, here you are these years later saying, not that it doesn't matter, no one wants to hear mean things, but in some ways being different was a source of resilience for you. Mm-hmm. That word, though, belonging, and that poem, The Boxes, I wondered if you do have a sense of rootedness, or if actually you're still exploring this idea of being a little dislocated from place, not necessarily identity, but if you feel like rooted either where you are now or just generally in your life.
I do feel rooted now. I think it took me a very long time to feel that way, and part of coming to feel that way, I think has involved writing. So, you know, earlier when we were talking about just the poet identity and what point, you know, at what point would I actually call myself a poet? I think that when I write and make sense of my experiences, then it's through that process of thinking and expressing myself that I start to feel, you know, like there's a center. And I think that, you know, having my writing move other people or touch other people in ways that I might not expect also has just made me feel very connected to the world around me. But it took a long time. And I think that part of this taking a long time was kind of feeling like, what is it about my experience that's generalizable that could reach other people? Like, I think that since I'm not really Brazilian, or probably Brazilians wouldn't think of me as that Brazilian and Indians wouldn't think of me as that Indian, and I'm definitely not, you know, seen as American, even though I'm an American citizen. I think that that sort of conundrum, but also not necessarily feeling like I'm a victim because of these diverse experiences, you know, I just didn't quite know how to represent that complexity in a way that would be strong. So I think it took a long time. And I think that becoming a mother, going through some of those drastic changes, losing my father did kind of help me sort of crystallize these concerns and these themes in my life.
You are quite explicit in your poems about halved, that being the formula. Why halved? I'm just curious how you landed on that being the fraction.
It comes up, the memory halved and self-portrait as a woman halved. When I was thinking about memory halved, it was literally just, you know, my remembering something, my father forgetting it. It felt like one half of a whole was gone. And, you know, when I think of like self-portrait of a woman halved, it's just like literally as there I'm talking about this line of pigment drawing itself down the middle of my torso and splitting me in two. And then also the fact that, you know, I am, you know, I have a parent from the East and a parent from the West. And I think these various experiences of feeling like some aspect of reality was being bisected.
To what extent has writing the poems in the book and then collecting them and publishing them as a book been some act of renewing or recreating or reweaving those two binaries or those halves of your experience and your life?
I think that writing allows me to sort of suture these fragments, I think that I feel like I'm motivated to write by some sense of there being like there was a before and then there was an after, and me trying to connect the dots between the before and the after. And so I think that with like motherhood and my sense of like losing a pre-mother self, there was a kind of attempt to stitch together these aspects of my personal history and then trying to stitch together my dad's personal history. And I think that the writing did feel as though I was kind of combining and stitching things together.
Can I ask, is now a good time for you to read something else that you'd like to share?
I could read The Boxes, because that feels like an important poem. The Boxes. We move. We move every few years. What's made of glass, we wrap in newspaper, boxing memories that for others live in hometowns. Their memories are perennials, sprouting thoughts of years before, when holes were dug, when kids couldn't decide between irises and alliums, then the irises won, peddling memories of arguments, reconciliations, purpling that summer. We move in trucks, in boxes, our contents, four continents, and who knows how many cities, rooms, drawers. How many corners of us are emptied in the new town, free of the objects left at the last town's goodwill. We miss the goodwill of old friends. Memories stretch from the last place, the way I reached for an apple at the old grocery store, the whole pyramid of them toppling over, bruised, rolling. Memories of things falling do not exist in neat arrangements on display tables. They do not gleam on the waxed skins of red delicious apples, assembled in the same spot in the same store we'd visit for years. We don't have the years. We store the store, our memories rolling to the next town, where some sense of not belonging lives under my hot cheeks as I overhear a girl tell another girl, the eyebrows of the new girl are like the tail of a squirrel. I hear the giggles. I feel the apples, bruised, rolling through my body, which is no grocery store. The floor of me does not shine. I am not lit with bright lights. I am the boxes we take to the next place, which tear and are taped. When my father starts to forget, I understand. The places never held us. We hold the places. We move.
Thank you for reading that. I love that poem. My feeling reading the book was about how language can make us and unmake us in real, meaningful ways. And the title of the book that you chose is the title of one of the poems, The Book Eaters. So I'm curious, why did you choose the title of one of the poems to be one of the book title?
Yeah, I think that when I was when I wrote that poem, it really it's when I had an aha moment about the book. I had been writing poems about motherhood, and then I started also writing poems about my father's memory loss. And I had this thought that, you know, maybe I was actually writing two books instead of one. And yeah, do I just write two separate books? And it was one day when I was reading and nursing and sort of thinking about how I'd never seen myself as a container of the nourishment of another human being. I had seen myself as a container of ideas, like, and how strange that was. And I suddenly was like looking at this book and I thought, I identified with the book, and I was just imagining like an insect eating away at this book and finding nourishment in it in this way that the author had never intended. You know, the author intends the words to be the source of like sustenance. And so with this wacky idea, I was like, oh, wow, I could use this metaphor of like book eating insects to get at, you know, some of these identity changes that I was experiencing as a new mother, but also to explore memory loss. And you know, as my father was losing his memory, I was really, you know, I was mourning that personal loss, but also thinking about how he had lived through historic events, and it felt like a loss of this historical knowledge. You know, he went through the partition of India when India's independence was declared. He moved from what's now Pakistan to what's now India. And so many of the people who went through those experiences are now dying. And so the idea of insects eating away at books felt like it could kind of weave together these themes that seemed disparate.
You've written about some really intimate and vulnerable experiences in your life. How did you do that? How did you traverse the vulnerability of that? And also not only yourself, but the people that are close to you, how have they taken to the work that is in some ways, you know, an expression of that vulnerability?
Honestly, I was just writing for myself as I was writing. I wasn't really thinking anybody was going to publish my work. So I think that, you know, I wanted it to be published, but when I start to write, I'm not writing for anybody else. And at the point when I start to think of it as something that might be worthy of publication, at that point, it's no longer, I no longer feel like, oh, this is a confession. It's more like, oh, I'm finding patterns in what I'm creating. And it's a different sort of mind that then is operating on that, like, oh, should I bring this pattern out, or should, or is this too heavy-handed? And so I think that when I come to the point of like publishing something, it's, I have a very different relationship to it as an object. And so I no longer feel as though I've like written something very personal, even though I have.
You talked about these poems as acts of processing. And I guess that's true of any creative act. It's some form of transformation, transition. But how, therefore, since 2016, when you first began working on this book, you know, here we are 8 years after that, how are you different as a result of having produced this creative body of work?
Well, I don't know why I'm just thinking of this, but when I first started it, we had just moved to Omaha. My husband and I had moved here with my daughter, and I'd been just wanting a tenure track job. I'd been wanting to have a book. And I both of these things felt like impossible things, to have a real career as a professor and to have also a career as a writer. And so here I am, you know, eight years later, with both of those things having happened and having happened here. And so it feels very satisfying, I think, to have those dreams realized. I think it's one thing to like want those things, but then to actually have them materialize has been fulfilling. And I feel like part of this community here in Omaha, but then also part of a writer community that is broader.
You mentioned having a realization that a lot of what you explore is loss. What's next? You are inevitably going to be writing about other themes in the world, themes of lived experiences that interest you, that seem to be particular, but also generally recognizable. What do you feel is calling to you now? What are you working on now? What do you see yourself being drawn to?
I've been writing about my relationship to books that I've read. You know, I've been thinking about how we relate to our own textual offspring and also how we relate to the text we consume. So I feel like I'm at very early stages of my next, you know, book of poems. And so it's probably too soon to say what it's about, but that's like one of the things I think about is there's just a strange experience of like when I was writing this, and if I put it down for a little while or was away from it for a while, I would like open my laptop with a kind of terror about like, what will I find there? I don't know why. And it made me think of, you know, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and the way that the Frankenstein relates the creature. You know, Frankenstein creates the creature, but then he's surprised by what the creature goes on and does. And I'm just kind of fascinated by that relationship that we have to our own creations. So I've been exploring it and kind of just seeing what happens.
You're just in the act of, now the book is just published, you're in you know, the process of reading to the public and engaging with the public around the book. Have you had feedback that has surprised you in some way, now that you're no longer the complete owner of this creative work? It's in the hands of others who are interpreting and consuming for themselves.
Yes. You know, one poem that led to just an interesting sort of exchange was that there was a woman who is German and her partner is Spanish, and she read my poem Small Green Bowl about my daughter being confused about, you know, of herself, thinking that she was kind of a you after being referred to as you. And anyway, she read this poem and was just like, oh my goodness, you know, my child did the same thing. But I had just assumed that this was because my child was in a multilingual household and maybe was kind of drifting in and out of languages. But she had no idea that this is a universal experience. And coming to read my poem gave her a different outlook on her son's childhood. And so that was just really satisfying to me, to have somebody else with a multicultural household having kind of an aha moment because of one of my poems.
Can we close with one more aha moment, if you wouldn't mind reading us out, please?
I will read that poem, Small Green Bowl, since it's Small Green Bowl. At 18 months, my daughter says, "Do you want more?" When she wants more grapes, more blueberries, more cubes of cheese to fill her small green plastic bowl. "Do you want to get up? Do you want to go out? Do you want to listen to that song again?" These are the questions I ask her, which she repeats. No I comes to fill the small green plastic bowl. Mama speaks of herself as Mama, and Mama's child is always you. As you learn to search yourself for the small green plastic bowl, I find an I, as do you. We fill the bowl together with cold berries.
My guest today has been the poet Carolina Hochindani, the author of the new poetry collection, The Book Eaters. Carolina, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Lives is brought to you on KIOS Omaha Public Radio and is produced by Courtney Bierman. The music you hear playing in and playing out is performed by Andrew Bailey. Podcasts of today's show and others can be found at livesradioshow.com or where you get your podcasts. Subscribe today and please leave a review. I'm your host, Stuart Chittenden. Join me next week as we delve further into the practical and profound possibilities of living well. Thanks for listening.